modifications or approval of the agenda?
Motion to approve.
Is there a second?
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Public presentations. This portion of the meeting is reserved for persons wanting to speak on any topic that's related to the audit committee meeting, or excuse me, any item that's not on the on the agenda can come forward and make a public presentation now. Seeing none, I'll close the public presentation portion. We'll move on to appointment of the audit committee chair and vice chairman for calendar year 2024-25. Do I have any nominations from?
Yes. So Supervisor Quintero said that he would be willing to be vice chairman for 24-25.
Okay. And so Chairman Quintero would love to be vice chair. Do I have to be chair then? Is that how that works?
You can be.
Well, if someone wants to appoint me, that's fine. If not, that's fine too. So
I'll move that we nominate Supervisor Magzig as chairman for the 24-25 year.
Second.
Motion and a second. Any further discussion? Anyone in the public wishing to comment on this nomination? Seeing none, I'll close the public portion. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Now let's do vice chairman.
I'll nominate Supervisor Quintero as vice chairman.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Hearing none, anyone in the public wishing to comment on this motion? Hearing, seeing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. All right. Moving on to item six, approval of the August 11th, 2023 audit committee meeting minutes. Any modifications to those minutes? Anyone in the public wishing to comment on the audit committee meeting minutes from August 11th? Seeing none, I'll close the public portion, bring it back to the board. We have a motion. Is there a second? We have a motion and a second. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Item seven, the consent items. There's one item, approval of the quarterly fraud report covering July 1st, 2023 to September 30th, 2023. Do any members want that item to be discussed? Seeing none, anyone in the public wishing to comment on the consent item? Seeing none, I'll close the public portion and entertain a motion for approval.
Motion to approve.
Is there a second?
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Moving on to item eight, discussion and action items. The first item is 8A, review and approve the Department of Social Services Food and Nutrition Services, also known as FNS-2009, report for the quarter ended June 30th, 2023. Staff, the floor is yours.
Okay. Good morning. This is Carol, audit manager from the Financial Reporting Audits. So this is an annual agreed upon procedures that we perform for the Department of Social Services for their food and nutrition services. And the purpose of this agreed upon procedures is to verify the claims and amounts reported for accuracy. We looked at June 30, 2023 quarter end, and our procedures involved reviewing assurance that the information reported on the report is accurate and can be supported with internal accounting records. We also review for assurance that the beginning and ending balances on the FNS 209 report are supported by automated claims management systems and paper records. And our results of our procedures yielded no issues with the three different types of claims that we review. That's it for me.
Any comments to staff on this item? Anyone in the public wishing to comment on this item? Hearing none, I'll close the public portion, bring it back. This is a review and approve, so it's an action item. I'll entertain a motion from the board.
Motion.
We have a motion to receive the report. Is there a second to that?
I'll second.
We have a motion to second. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Moving on to item 8B, review and approve the Department of Social Services payroll compliance follow-up audit for dates and calendar years 2022 and 2023.
So we conducted a payroll compliance audit for the Department of Social Services for calendars years 22 and 23. The purpose of this follow-up audit was to review and evaluate any corrective action response of the department to address any deficiencies and recommendations. Our procedures included reviewing the department's revised policies and procedures regarding overtime approval. At the time that our audit began, and the department was still in the process of updating their policies and procedures. We also verified whether the underpayments and overpayments from the prior engagement were submitted to our payroll unit for correction. We were able to verify that all payroll adjustments were submitted to our payroll unit. And lastly, we selected a sample consisted of 31 overtime transactions and performed a test of controls and details. This included verifying the existence of a minimum of 2 signatures within their timesheets, verifying that the supervisor and timekeeper signatures match the authorized approval list that the department keeps. We also verified that the timesheet is supported by the clock times and all other supporting documentation. Then we ensured that the checked up information was accurate. We verified for accuracy. And then we also verified the existence of 3 different signatures within their individual overtime request form per the department policies and procedures. And we also verified whether overtime and standby documentation existed and was accurate and completely filled out. So we did have 3 findings on our testing, and one of them was a lack of effective internal controls over their timesheets. There were 12 out of the 31 transactions selected for testing that included approved timesheets that were not supported by clock times. They also included hours logged for the incorrect pay. And then there was a lack of support for standby coded and omitted hours included on the standby log. So our recommendation for the department was to review their internal control to mitigate the risk of inaccurate timesheets. This should include performing a thorough review of the timesheets, clock times, and other supporting documentation, especially for overtime and other differential pay coded. The second finding was a lack of or incomplete overtime and differential pay documentation. So the department does have policies and procedures to submit a form for overtime requests, and this should include 3 different signatures within the form. And we did find that 8 out of the 31 transactions that we tested included forms that did not include the 3 different signatures. Some just had 1 signature and or 2, but 8 of them lack all 3. We also find that 21 out of the 31 transactions were not supported by overtime or standby documentation. Among these instances were examples of departments form 0749. Which is their overtime sign-in and sign-out time sheet, that neglected to include a selection under the log and indicated incorrect time frames. Our TOR finding was under and over payments. So we did find that 7 out of the 31 transactions that we review were erroneous payments for earn codes such as overtime, standby, and callback. So based on the supporting documentation or lack thereof, 3 of the 7 were overpayments, with the largest overpayments totaling $527.82. And then the remaining 4 were underpayments, with the largest underpayment totaling $141.82. I know that that this department did respond to our recommendations, and and they're here to address any questions that you have.
Excellent report. And so with that, I've got some questions before I move on to other board members. So who is here from Department of Social Services payroll?
We have Johnny Mua, we have Grace Deal, Bruna Chavez.
All right, so if I could have you come forward, because I've got some specific questions that I'm gonna need you guys to answer. Because I know in the report that was presented to us, Carol did a great job just kind of summing some of that up. But as I read the conclusion section of that report, it says, the results of the follow-up audit also conclude that not all recommendations from the previous audit were implemented. That's one concern. Additionally, it does not appear that the additional training has been conducted related to the department's overtime process. That's a second issue I have. And third, the department submitted payroll adjustment forms to the payroll unit for the discrepancies identified in the initial audit. But with those submittals of overpayments and underpayments, have those been rectified? I need someone to comment to those three issues first.
Yes. For the first one, we did, you know, the process of us actually changing policy is a lengthy process, and we did complete that. And in the meantime, when they came back, we had only implemented the DOM, Department of Director's Office Memorandum, because we hadn't completed the PPG process of meet and confer and making those adjustments. So that's why that was not complete. As far as the training, we take the Director's Office Memorandum and do that as a you must review this with your staff kind of process. So it's not a formal training, but each supervisor, you know, signs in into our little SAVA and tracks that they reviewed it with their employees. That's as far as we go. It's not a formal training per se, but that is the expectation of the supervisors to complete that review with their staff and the PMs with chiefs. I'm sorry, their division chiefs with their supervisors. So that's how we complete that. It's not, you're not going to find a training per se, but it's expected that you go talk to your staff, and it's expected that you go talk to your supervisors to review what the change is as far as forms. What we found is that ourselves, our own processes, were actually creating a lot of the findings, because we have a lot of forms, we have pre-approvals, and then you have to go adjust what was pre-approved based on what you actually did work. And if you forgot to go back and readjust the form, but you went ahead and filled out your timesheet correctly, the two things didn't match. And that's what we were finding was creating a lot of our overtime issues, like the overpayment and underpayment you were talking about. So I just go right into that. Was actually not being supported by having the correct documentation. So what we started doing is we have different ways that overtime is needed in our department. One of them is, you know, somebody's right there, we got to help them, and we'll help them until we finish the process of whatever we're doing. We consider that as you can't plan for that. There's other overtime where you can actually plan for, right? If there are projects, we're backlogged on some work, and we create plans to catch up. What we were doing is requiring pre-approval of plans, which is fine, but it was harder to take into account the just now needed kind of overtime. But we were still having to get some, we were requesting ourselves that there'd be a request and there'd be an approval. Sometimes that was lacking, depending on who was available to actually do the approval. But in the meantime, we do stay and help the consumer that needs the assistance. In standby, which is work that usually happens after hours, that's really where we find a lot of the issues with making sure that all the documents have their correct signatures. The way that we went back, or supervisors went back to verify whether that was done, which one's right? Is the documentation correct, or is the timesheet correct? Because that was a discrepancy. Documentation didn't match timesheet. That was really the discrepancy. So going back to what was done during the time, meaning having to go back to see what did you work on, how much did you, then we literally have to go back and see what was done. In our little documentation, we also ask now that they actually document, you know, and we do, what cases they work on, because usually it's case driven, or what drove the overtime. So those are the things that we have put into place and adjusted the requirement of having to constantly do the pre-approval and then adjust the approval, meaning usually when our staff know that they're going to have to work overtime, they have They can't just choose to do overtime, correct? They have to get, it does have to get pre-approved. But how that happens is where we're changing the process so it can be tracked instead of a form. If it's an email, if it's a communication with your supervisor, if it's you just got approval, we're making those adjustments. It was our own created forms that was creating the discrepancies. We can track the same idea, the same approval process with emails, or even, what's it called, communicating back and forth with your supervisor. Because again, a lot of the as needed happens after hours. So that's where we have the unplanned.
One of the things I'd be looking for is our policies and procedures should match what you are doing.
Practice.
And so if there are changes that need to be made to either practice or PNPs, then figure out what those tweaks need to look like. And then two, the funding sources that we utilize have requirements as well. There's federal standards, there's state standards. And so typically they have best practices out there that we need to follow, and we can't really deviate from that. So I guess the question I have for you, the process that currently is being used in Department of Social Services as it relates to these 31 different payments that were reviewed, did we follow appropriate federal and state requirements as it relates to people's payroll?
I'm going to say yes. The intent of how we write the PPGs is first and foremost to comply with what we're supposed to comply in case they come down themselves and audit us. We actually do appreciate it when the in-between audits happen because it actually, in my mind, triggers, hey, maybe we're falling out of compliance. Maybe we're not dotting all our T's and I's kind of thing. But that is how we write our PPGs, first with that in mind. And so sometimes I think we overdue and trying to check and check and check and create our own problems when we write our PPGs instead of really taking the common sense approach of what can you do really in that instance. Like, again, having to create a form when you actually got approval through an email, why is the form necessary if the email suffices as backup documentation? And it would. So to answer your question, it would. It's approval. That's what we're looking for.
Okay. So currently you're in the process of cleaning up a lot of the policies and procedures in that you follow.
Yes.
So the quicker we can make that happen, I think the better.
So we have. So now we're there. But at the time that they came back for the second review, we were in the process of.
Got it. So that's what I needed you to say is just that it's done now, so it should be seamless. One of the things I would encourage our auditor to do is maybe at some point in the next 12 months, maybe do another spot check just to maybe take a look at another, 15 or 20 payroll forms just to make sure that everything's looking good. Because I would imagine that with documentation, there could be costs that would be questioned from our funding source where at the end of the day, the County of Fresno may end up having to eat, some of these costs if we don't have appropriate documentation in place. And I definitely don't want to see that happen. So does that sound pretty reasonable?
Yes. And I thought that was going to be the process. So this was the second review come around again. And so I believe that usually is how it works until things are clear.
So Oscar, the auditor controller. So I was going to ask the department while we have them here. So in my mind, I would think if they have everything cleaned up, hopefully by fiscal year 25, so starting in July of next year, we'd go out there again and do the same thing. So if that's enough time for you.
Yeah.
So that's what we plan on doing.
Perfect. All right. I've just used a whole bunch of time. Board members, any other comments, questions that you have on this item? Yes.
So on the 7 over and under payments, mm-hmm. are we saying that these were caused because of a...
The finding was made because the documents didn't match up,
the
right?
documents didn't match
didn't
up.
Match
we
up.
Didn't actually pay somebody more than the overtime they actually worked.
Correct. That's what we found.
And we didn't actually underpay.
Right, but
somebody.
There's no way an auditor would know. They can only see what
right,
the documentation
they
supports.
Track the documents, and if you have a policy that says you have to have this document filled out, that document has to be filled out, or that time isn't authorized.
Right. Or if I think a lot of it was noting what hours, again, in the planning and how we created our own documentation, what match as far as a log saying that they worked X hours, but the timesheet has a different hour is really all that the auditor would have had available to them to see if they matched. The OT logs, again, keep making sure that staff really either removing pre-approvals and whether it matches or not to the hours noted there and actually going back to adjusting any logs that actually indicate the hours, or via email.
Yeah, and I have a general question then for the auditor's office in terms, I know everybody is understaffed, so we get to these as we can, but there has been a tool, you know, in terms of a process review, you know, which this shows that we had some forms in there that you couldn't get filled out when somebody had to work overtime right away, and that created the finding. And it meant that when you go back and look, you see that, oh, as Supervisor Magzik said, you got to match our policies to what our actual practices are. But it may also indicate that we have steps in that process that are not necessary for the approval.
Right.
And, you know, do we have the capability to do a full, you know, process review, like of your, you know, time frame to see if you can cut out those? Are you just doing that based on your experience? You know, there's sometimes there's companies that can do this. In Yolo County, our internal services department would set up it was like a computer thing. They would set up a flow chart like a program, and they would identify unnecessary steps in processes that then the department could cut out. And they applied it to our social services department, and in a couple instances, they removed several steps out of processes that, because over time, as the regs change, yes. You write a new policy. Yes.
And so and that is what we're doing, but we are really usually constantly in that process as far as, you know, how we do practice one, you know. I'm assuming you're talking about all processes.
Payroll, right?
And that just payroll? Because we're constantly adjusting our processes based on regulation change as far as how we do practice. And it's lengthy, so it isn't something necessarily that we are reviewing constantly. It is something that we start, we take opportunities, I'm going to say like this one, and we take opportunities of actually a law regulation changing to go back and see what did we write in the process. And many times workload drives us into look, okay, what do we have in process that is actually to reduce steps. That is what we're doing in all of it.
I just want to comment on what Dan said. So we are launching a Lean Six Sigma pilot program in some departments in the new year that are very much like what Dan spoke to, and eventually we'll get to DSS where it reviews all procedures, and the goal is to cut out and identify, you know, inefficiencies or hindrances that we may not see. I just have a couple of quick questions that relate to kind of following up to that. So I think I heard you say that the it was documentation, but we still had three that were underpayments and overpayments. So some were documentation, but there were three that were truly either underpayment or overpayment, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
And we got that.
Three underpayments, four overpayments, right? Three underpayments, four overpayments.
I'll tell you right now.
According to documentation.
The reason I'm confused is that the comments.
Three over and four under.
Four under. Okay, four under. Other way around.
Yeah. Well, but the comments say that staff and supervisor confirmed timesheet is correct for some of them. So those are not true. Does that mean that they were truly not an underpayment or overpayment once we got the documentation, correct?
Correct. So there was only going to be three adjustments needed for this.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And they were submitted by the department. The other question I have is, I know we had a backlog in the auditor's office. Have they been committed in the auditor's office as well or completed?
Yes.
We received confirmation from the HR that it's been processed.
Okay.
It's Oscar Garcia again. So there is no backlog anymore. The payroll's done an excellent job, and they've got it all under control. So,
okay.
So as soon as they come in, they're processed.
Thank you. And then I know when this audit first came up, one of the issues we had was beyond the forms. It was the idea of employees working overtime, getting through the payroll approval process, without having not just the documentation, but necessarily the approval. So that, maybe we over-processed it with our forms, but at this point that can no longer occur with the processes that are in place, correct?
Correct. So making the streamlined process of approval better and not just the form, not just relying on the form, I think will help with that, because we can't, If you can produce an email or some sort of documentation, who's keeping that email? That's the processes that we have streamlined, like within each individual unit, each administrative assistant that's doing that unit is taking care of that, so that it, in a department of 2,700, it's not falling on just HR.
I did have an additional question for the department. So one of the concerns that I have is if there were underpayments, three of them, these are only the ones that we tested. How many others are there? And how can we be assured that staff is getting paid correctly?
I would assume that would take a full review of all payroll. And I mean, that's that. If you're asking that question, it would be no different than how do we assure all payments in the county are made correctly?
But in
making sure that going forward we're following the processes, what we know we are doing, we could take a bigger sample. But I would think, I don't know.
I thought we determined that of the seven that we found, that based on the audit were overpayments or underpayments. Correct. The people either actually worked the hours that they got paid for. So those that were identified as overpayments really worked those hours, and it yes. wasn't an overpayment.
I think Oscar's concern was people working and not getting compensated for their hours worked.
Correct.
I think
that's what I'm saying. Okay. So what I'm trying to focus in on is that the three overpayments and and the four underpayments that we had were actuarial or audit failures because they showed because you didn't have the documentation backing it up. But when you went and checked, the people that supposedly were overpaid actually worked, say, that mm-hmm. extra 2 hours of overtime, mm-hmm. right?
Yes.
Okay, and the people that got underpayments didn't work the full amount of time. So what they put on their payroll sheet was correct, and they weren't underpaid for the amount of overtime they worked. Is that correct?
No, it's the other way around. It really is. For those that are considered underpayments, the employee didn't get paid their half hour that they should have been compensated
for. Those were
for.
Real underpayments.
Yes.
So we
yes,
might have were. Wage claims out there for people if they don't know this.
Usually employees really are in tune whether they worked overtime. Sometimes that isn't the case because of the amount of overtime they might work, but I really... without doing a full review, and what am I reviewing against? It's just really what I would think. I don't. I'm trying to think how you would actually do that.
We'll have to handle those as they come up.
Right. Yes, and so again with the overpayments, I'm sorry, we're beating a dead horse, but we kind of have to because I think this is a really important issue. When you went back and looked at the seven. Because you said of the 31 that were looked at, there were seven who were either overpaid and underpaid. Right, Carol?
Correct.
So four of the seven, it was just a documentation issue. But there were three that were truly underpaid, correct? So there were three. So that represents if there were 31 total files that we looked at, it's just under 10% that... have an issue of being underpaid, correct? So as you look at just the number of people who work, 2,600, 2,700?
Yes.
Looking at the whole department of DSS, you can kind of extrapolate out if numerically there is an issue that is across the entire system. That's a big number. You're looking at 260 people that where there might be some issues. The payrolls that we looked at were only for one pay period, correct? We didn't go back and look at multiple pay periods and discover an issue. Carol, help me if I'm missing
it was
something.
Multiple pay periods within calendar years 22 and 23.
And it was random. So you selected 31 people and then looked at multiple pay periods for those 31 people?
So we focus on overtime. That's how we select our sample. And we selected the most overtime. We try to select people with the most overtime for the different pay periods within those years.
And again, what you found is the biggest people with the most overtime, there was an issue. There was not issues with what they were being paid. It was a documentation issue. But there were some people who were being underpaid.
Correct, and just to clarify, there were two underpayments, and one of them was an overpayment for 0.50 hours.
So helping me understand all of that, that's helpful because, again, when you were doing the sampling, you were looking at a specific area. So there's an argument to be made that we don't have a 9 or 10% problem across the entire workforce. You were looking at a specific subset of the workforce. And so there's no way to really know if this is a bigger issue across all the other workers. But I think it's important for us to implement these new policies and procedures, being able to track this to the extent that we can reduce any documentation issues. Making sure that documentation matches pay is very important. So in July, as the auditor has an opportunity to come back out and take a look, I'm very hopeful that we'll see a significant reduction and hopefully no issues that come up with the next sampling group that they take a look at. Any other questions?
The only comment or suggestion I might make is I noticed when you sent out the procedures, there was a memo that went out and talking points for supervisors and managers. Hopefully that's enough. I know you've got a big department and that they understand the why behind it. But every supervisor got the same documentation and memo that explained what to do and what not to do.
Correct. And that's why I was saying, you know, that's how we tend to implement, I guess, outside of in the classroom training, you know, and said training that is our, I guess, training because this is the procedure you will follow. Outside of classroom training, I suppose.
Okay.
That's the expectation.
I have no further questions.
Manuel, don't you want to be like everyone else? Ask a question.
I just have a question. Within your department, and this is just to bring it home, you have very specific units that on a regular basis, you know, engage in overtime.
Yes.
And so you've identified those. So the majority of the overtime is very focused. Is that correct?
Correct, and that's how it, okay. I mean, it's the reflection of the sample. I
wanted to make sure it was,
yes.
That was the case. Okay, thank you.
Anyone in the public wishing to comment on this item? Seeing none, I'll close the public portion, bring it back to the board. This is an action item to approve the report, and there's been direction that's been given as well. Anyone want to make a motion?
I'll move we approve the report.
Is there a second? Second. I have a motion and a second. All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? It passes. Next item is 8C. Thank you, Department of Social Services. We appreciate you being here.
You.
Review and approve amendment to agreement number 19-309 with Brown Armstrong Accountancy Corporation for independent and professional external audit services. Staff, the floor is yours. Paige.
Good morning, Paige Benavides, the County Administrative Office. The item before you today is a request from Brown Armstrong for a contract fee increase of $46,750 for the fiscal year 22-23 audit for a total annual maximum of $244,750 or approximately 24%. The written request and proposed revised cost schedules are included in your agenda packets for your review and reference. During the term of the agreement, Brown Armstrong has indicated that they, like the county, have experienced staffing issues requiring additional audit hours, resulting in an increase in costs for the firm. Additionally, the county received more federal and state grant funding, which also required additional audit hours. And based on the average staff time spent by Brown Armstrong during the last 2 years and year-to-date experience, they anticipate that the fiscal year 22-23 audit will require similar or more than the two-year average number of audit hours. The proposed increase is about less than half the difference between the current contracted price and their average cost for the last 2 years, as detailed in the proposal letter. But if approved, this increase would only apply to services for the fiscal year 22-23 audit and would not apply to services already rendered for audits of previous fiscal years. The county has exercised all additional one-year extensions on this five-year agreement, and we will be issuing a request for proposal of audit services for the fiscal year 23-24. So it is the last year of this agreement. Eric Chin of Brown Armstrong and staff from the auditor's office are available for questions at this time. Thank you.
Any questions from members?
So as I'm understanding it, compared to what was sort of contracted for under the existing agreement, we're anticipating additional services will be provided. So there is some consideration for this amendment.
This is Eric Shin. I'm the engagement partner for the independent audit. Yes, to answer your question, due to the COVID and the flow of the grant funding, we are expect to do additional work, you know, out of the scope based on the previous...
out of the scope that was in the previous agreement.
Yeah, for example, for single audit, we typically do like five major programs. Due to COVID, they have, you know, CARES funding, the other infrastructure funding, ARPA funding. So we are forced to do actually three or four additional programs to finish our single audit, because we are on a rotational basis. Any new program over $3 million, we are required to do it. So we just have no option to skip it. And then for the OES and the state grants, when the year we submitted the proposal, it was like around 10 grants we are auditing. And 2 years ago, it's grown to almost like 20 grants. So we're doing double our time on it. So
what about FEMA, some of the FEMA reimbursements that we're getting? Do you have to do audits on some of the federal funds? Because we've had Creek Fire, we've had storms. So is that also additional work that your office has to do?
Actually, so far that hasn't hit yet, because for FEMA grants, it's a little bit different. So when that happened, you know, the county will incur the cost. But until the FEMA approves the funding, we're not required to do it, because you cannot recognize the federal expenditure at that point. So.
Okay, well, that's good to know.
But the expansion in number of grants wasn't anticipated or under consideration at the time you bid the first?
No, that's 5 years ago. Yeah, that's just...
Well, we understand that, but you bid for 5 years.
Right.
You know, we enter contracts to control our cost. If the costs of the services go up, that protects the person that has entered into the contract for a set price, and puts the burden on the person that's offered the services at those price to suffer the
Correct.
Increases.
Thank
but
you
were talking about some additional services that you have to take on outside the scope of the original agreement, so that there is consideration for this amendment.
Correct.
I think just the CARES and ARPA requirements that are out there with that additional funding that was thrown at us, there's no way anyone could have seen that happening. You know, just for that reason, I can appreciate the added cost burden. And then, this is more than just the fact that costs have gone up. This is the amount of work that's being done is a lot higher than what you actually bid on back in 2018 or 19, right?
Correct. Yeah. And then due to COVID, for example, like the ACFA area, you know, when Audit Controls Office has turnovers in the reporting area, then we have to raise the risk higher. We have to do additional work to make sure, you know, everything is still fairly stated in your statements, so which costs lots of additional work too.
Understood. Any other questions for Brown Armstrong?
Mr. Cederberg, does this have to be reviewed by council, any modification to this agreement?
I'm sorry, say again.
Do you have to review this change in the agreement, council, county council?
Well, not every contract that, you know, we sign off on contracts that go through. I'm not aware if the CAO has been working with somebody in our office on this, I'm sure, but
yes,
I'm not aware of this individual.
The item is on the agenda for the December 12th meeting, pending approval or action here today. And I've been working with Peter Wall on the agreement.
And then I'm comfortable then, if it's Peter, that an analysis of there being sufficient consideration for this amendment exists. As some of you may have heard from us in your departments, a contract is a contract is a contract. You enter in contracts and purchase services to protect yourself from increases in prices. It's not the obligation of the county to ensure that our vendors make money in future years. It's our obligation to make sure we get the contracted services for what they are. So that when somebody comes and wants an amendment to a contract for additional money, there has to be consideration, you know, for that. Something in addition than what was contracted for in the first setting in order for it to be just a contract. You have to, you know, an element of a contract is consideration. Somebody not making money is not consideration. That's what you contract for, is to put that burden on the vendor. But I'm comfortable, if this has gone through Peter's review, that that review of whether the contract contains adequate consideration has been made.
Just an additional comment. In working with Peter, the concern really was to ensure that this increase is not for services already rendered. And so that's spelled out very clearly in the board agenda item, and it does only apply to the fiscal year 22-23 cost schedule.
And originally when we entered into contract, it was for 3 years with 2 one-year options?
No, it's for 1 year with 4 options. So actually, even four this options. Year, before I signed the contract, I discussed with Craig, and he thinks it's the best for the county for us to sign the contract first and then request the amendment, versus otherwise, if I don't sign it, you guys have to go through the RFP process. This
who said audit. You should sign it first and then request an increase?
You don't need to answer that question. Yeah. So any other comments? Stop badgering the witness. I'm just kidding.
just one quick comment.
Yes.
It's just a question for the auditor's office. That will mitigate our cost going forward, I believe. Oscar, at one point, we were having a lot of turnover in the FRNA area, and I know we worked with your office to implement some changes that would hopefully offset that. And I just wanted to have you share that what you're seeing today, from what I've heard, is that that problem has been mitigated. Is that correct?
So you are correct. So in the auditor controller and the division of FRNA, financial reporting and audits, we did have a lot of turnover. The board was gracious enough to give a stipend to the individuals there for the last year and a half. We have not lost anyone there. So we have all that experience. Rochelle and her team is doing a heck of a job. So we don't anticipate that problem anymore.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Yes.
Given the agreement is expiring next year, I believe we're on the last, so we have a good timeline on when we need to go out for RFP or all that. All right, thank you.
All right, seeing no further questions, anyone from the public wishing to comment on this item? All right, seeing none, I'll close the public portion. Thank you for being here. And board, what is your recommendation to the Board of Supervisors?
I move we recommend approval of the amendment.
We have a motion to recommend this to the Board of Supervisors to approve the amendment. Is there a second?
Second.
We'll take Manuel's second. All right. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Moving on to 8D, review and accept the independence certification.
Oscar, the Auditor Controller again. So every year I'm required by our standards, so the internal auditing and by the Institute of Internal Audits, the Red Book, to go ahead and state that or testify that my staff have not been assigned to audits that would prevent them from objectively planning, conducting, reporting, or otherwise participating and reaching independent conclusion in accordance with their with the standards I just mentioned. So I am doing that now. So if there's any questions on that, I would be willing to answer these questions, except from Dan. No, I'm kidding.
This is a routine item, but any questions from board members? Anyone in the public wishing to comment on this item? Hearing none, I'll entertain a motion to accept the independent certification.
Thank you.
Cole Linder has made the motion. Is there a second? We have a motion and a second. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Review and approve the 2024 Audit Committee meeting dates. I will state my calendar. I'm sure my staff has reviewed this. I'm not aware of Brett saying that there are any issues. Sometimes my My calendar is mobile and hostile. So which one can't you make?
January
5th, it might be tough. Let me just ask, is the January 5th meeting absolutely necessary, or is there opportunity for us to kind of flex that a little bit?
We're planning on taking the annual comprehensive financial report. I know to the first meeting of, you know, the Board of Supervisors, so we wanted to have it the Friday before that.
We're probably going to have to keep that January 5th date. For other members, how does that look? I'm sure I can make it work. I'll talk to the chairman of the Board of Supervisors, too, and see if he's cool with that.
And if this is Oscar again. So it is important because we have to go ahead and issue the debt compliance report for Emma, so it's got to be that timing issue. So
All right, so let's do this. Carol, if you can maybe, since that really is less than a month away, just check with audit committee members. I know we're missing two today, but let's just make sure we're going to be able to have a quorum on the 5th of January.
Okay, will do.
You're wonderful. Okay, perfect.
I can be available via phone.
All right.
Now at 11:30.
No worries.
Just available by phone means that you have to have a site that we can post the notice on. Where people can attend, public can attend from wherever you are.
We'll get it figured out, don't worry.
For the brand.
Yeah, it doesn't matter where it is as long as it's accessible.
All right, we'll stick with these dates. Anyone in the public wishing to comment on the stated dates for 2024 meeting dates?
Can I ask a question about this? I'll be
on vacation
for that day.
Oh. Well, for the CAFR, does
if you can have a representative? Yeah, I can have Paul.
Yeah, he'll have his representative.
It's fine. I'll take it easy on the rep. Well, no, I won't. I like to. I'm gonna.
You're new here, aren't you?
We'll break that representative in. Okay. All right, we'll stick with the schedule is what I'm hearing. So anyone in the public wishing to comment? We had one, but seeing no further public comment, I'll close that. Entertain a motion for approval. We have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Staff updates.
I don't have too many updates other than we're continuing some audits. I think I talked last meeting that we were doing department audits. We're in the process right now. Do we have a completion date on that or time frame for ISD?
I know our initial deadline was end of December, but due to having to go back and forth with departments on the requested information, we're probably going to have to extend that.
Okay, so it looks like January. We're having a little, I don't know, I might have to reach out to Dan later, getting interviews, right, scheduled. There's some kind of conflict as to we can talk to them, we can't talk to them.
With
I've
probation.
Been reading those emails, probation. So I'll talk to you off the record as to what's going on that they just don't want to interview with the auditors. I mean, they look harmless enough. I mean, I'm not really sure. So we will continue that. Like I said, like Carol said, it kind of extended that because we're having a little conflict with a little problem getting people to interview them. So that's all that I have.
Oops, stay there, though, because I think some of the members may have some comments for you.
So okay. My term is ending this month, at the end of this month.
Okay.
I enjoy my participation here, and I come here on my own time. I don't know if this affects the January 5th meeting if I don't reapply or get appointed. I'm not sure how that works, so I need a bit of guidance here.
Does the Board of Supervisors appoint to this, or does the Audit Committee appoint to? I always forget. I serve on 20 boards.
Carol,
I can't keep them all.
I believe for public members, there's an application that they have to do.
Application? Okay.
Yeah.
But who appoints? Does the Board appoint them, or do we?
The Board of Supervisors? Does the Audit Committee approve?
You do.
Here's what we do. So, as I understand it, and correct me if I'm wrong, since we've got an attorney next to me and staff here, but I think you remain on this committee until someone else replaces you.
The normal body is, if you want to continue to serve, the normal rule is once you're on a committee and your term expires, you remain in service until the next member is appointed and qualifies, which means gets appointed, swears in.
So you can be here to vote, as I understand it, on the 5th. And what I would ask, Manuel, if you still enjoy doing this, please fill out an application. And what we can do, too, at the January 5th meeting is add an item for us to, you know, to vote on one of the public members. Okay. And Coolwinder, when is your term up?
I did a renewal this last year.
Yeah.
So I'll look at
it. Is it 2 or 3 years?
2 years.
2 years? Mm-hmm. And it just alternates then? Okay. So maybe it's just Manuel that needs to...
By December next year. I think so. I think we're altered. I think we're off.
Yeah.
Okay. So Manuel's got to... needs to redo that. Okay, not a problem. So see Bernice on the way out or the clerk's office. They'll get you an application. You can probably fill it out right there, and then we'll add it to the agenda so it can be an action item for us at the next meeting.
All right.
All right. And then I do have a question. So some members of the public have been, I think, a little bit confused as they've looked at some of our financial statements. I know that for accounting purposes, we use the accrual process here. Some people, I think, when they take a look at our budgets and numbers, they quantify and look at our financials and think it's a cash statement, but it's based on accruals. So, Oscar, I don't know if you can just share a little bit. I know that there's GASB 34, GASB 68. We have our annual budgets that we pass. From what you've seen, you've been the auditor, controller, treasurer, tax collector here in the county, I think, since October of 2016. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So from just looking at our financial position from an accrual standpoint as well as from a cash standpoint.
Well, modified accrual. So on the fund statements where the board budgets is on the modified accrual basis, which means the concern is the current economic resources, which is a year or less. So that's what the board budgets on that year or less.
So
the government-wide statement, which you're mentioning, were GASB 68, which is our pension liability, that came into play in 2014 and reported in 2015. All governments have to show the liability on their books where they didn't have to before. So the statement of net position, which uses the accrual basis of accounting, sometimes the unrestricted, is negative. It has what we call a debit balance showing negative on the financials. That is not an indication of how well the county is doing, because the county budgets on a yearly basis based on the fund statements, and those are good. And Eric is back here to say other counties, other governments have also had that unrestricted go negative because of that big liability. We can't predict. We, the county, can't predict what FISERA is invested in. So sometimes the market's good, sometimes the market's bad. So it could be up to, in the past several years, it could be up to $1 billion unfunded liability, which the county is the lion's share, is probably about 95% of that is the county's. So we have to show that. We have to show all our assets. We have to show all our liabilities and pension obligations that were issued that will be going away in 2033, but those are still on there. Those have to be shown on the books. So there's a big liabilities out there that we have to reflect on there. It's my understanding, not quite, the audit's not finished, but in this 2023, that unrestricted is going to go positive. But we're not audited yet, and Eric can answer any questions on net position as well that I haven't covered.
So really...
there is no cash basis. I know there was a misconception that we use the cash, that we do not use the cash basis.
Understood.
Modified accrual and accrual.
We have a treasury pool that has cash in it, and we pay our bills with cash. And looking at it from a cash standpoint, maybe I should rephrase it this way. Since you've been the auditor, controller, treasurer, tax collector, has the fiscal health of the county remained the same, improved, decreased?
Fiscal health of the county is good. We are maintaining to pay our bills. We have the liabilities, like I said, we have to retire those. We can't pay those off early. Otherwise, I believe this board would look into trying to pay those off. We cannot pay those off.
Well, I think when the pension obligation bonds were issued, they specifically in the covenant said they can't be paid off.
Correct. Early. And they were trying to get a little spread on the discount that they were paying, and in so doing, locked us into you can never refinance these otherwise. It's like heavy penalties.
And you can't pay them off early.
So it is what it is until 2033 when those are paid off. But that's all we can do is continue paying our bills, and the board budgets on a healthy fund statement, which is the modified accrual basis. We're paying our bills this next year. We're accounting for all that. And another thing in the statement of net position that doesn't get reflected in the liability, state and federal programs, which DSS is here, they're responsible for a big chunk of that, that the federal and state is going to help us. Probably about 50 or 55% of that liability will be retired with federal and state program money that we cannot put on there. We absorb the whole liability, even though somebody else has given us money to pay these off. So it's kind of it's a little bit deceiving that that's all ours when, in fact, we have others that are paying into that. So it looks a lot worse than it is, but it's not what we're using to budget for.
Maybe in the future, GASB should take a look at, because I know that they've asked me to comment on growing concerns in general, but maybe one of the things that they need to do is actually reflect with pension liabilities that exist, since GASB 68 requires us to take that into consideration, that restricted funding programs do pay for a big chunk of that. And I think that needs to be looked at. It needs to be reflected as well on our financial statements to give a true picture on financial health of organizations, because there are some entities out there that are maybe more burdened when it comes to their discretionary revenues versus, I think, Fresno County. I've seen more and more discretionary revenues being freed up as we've paid off old liabilities. And also, too, you mentioned the pension that we have. One of the things that I know the FSARA board did is they lowered the discount rate. And so while that didn't do anything to the investments per se, anytime you lower the discount rate, automatically it creates an unfunded liability, because the assumed rate of return drops. And so that means that payments have to increase for that lower assumed rate of return, even though in reality our stocks haven't done any worse or better. But it was lowered, I think, 50 basis points or more. I think it was 50 basis points.
I think 75. It started at 725. It's at 650 right now.
Yep. So 75 basis points.
Last 6 years or so, it's been lowered about 75 basis points.
That is a huge, that's a huge hit to financial position, I would imagine, based upon.
And then the other thing that you're not comparing, sometimes you're comparing apples to oranges, because some of these other pensions might still have it at 7%, like Supervisor Magzik is saying. And so you're comparing something that they're never going to realize. There's no way that they're going to continue 7% for their pension funds. It's just not in this environment to do.
And I would imagine as well the amortization schedule matters, because there still are a lot of pensions that amortize their unfunded liabilities over, hopefully no one does it over 30 years, but there still are some.
20 years,
there still are some at 20. We're at 15. So the shorter that amortization schedule, the more of a hit each year to the bottom line, as well as the discount rate matters. So FSARA is pretty conservative when it comes to their assumed rate of return and how quickly they want to pay off those unfunded liabilities with that shorter
amortization. And the other thing, as the county goes, is that every year, I believe your office, Paul, gets this is a bill that you're going to have to pay the next year as far as deductions from employee and employer, what we have to pay to FSARA. They dictate that. The actuarial dictates that based on the information. So we have no control over what that bill is. We pay that bill on that budget that I spoke about earlier on the fund statements, and that's what the board is doing. That's what the board should be doing. And I could let Eric explain about going concern, but if there was a going concern issue with the county, Eric would have already pointed that out.
No, actually, you're right. The GASB is looking into it. I think in the next couple of years, they're going to change the model, twist the model again to make it more reader friendly, so hopefully the public make public easier to understand the ACFA. It's just lots of times it's just too complicated and put in different bases of accounting. So.
They've actually reached out to me and have asked. They want to interview me to provide them with guidance, as I understand it, for this new process.
Right.
I don't know if it's wise for me to, you know, even though I'm not a CPA. I know just a little bit.
I think it would be wise, now that I'm thinking about it, for you to meet with them, because you know a little bit about the fund statements and about the statement of net position and what the public is going to be looking at. So you could offer that up, and you get your constituents to say, these are our concerns based on the financials, and you could share that with them. You know what? It would be nice to know as a public to what does this mean? Is that bad or is that good? Can the county pay their bills? And then they would have a better understanding of where the public is coming from for the GASB. So if I talk to them, I mean, it's just going to be more work for staff that they have to implement another GASB. I mean, 68 leases, and every time they issue a GASB, staff has to work harder. So I think it would be better as to what does the public want to know. So I think you would offer that up to them as far as how can you easily read these financials being on the public side and hearing from
Send me another email because I think the one you sent me was...
I know. I thought that and I started hearing this and I'm going, you know, it's probably a good idea to for you to get the public's view and instead of the high-tech stuff on the accountants and CPAs. And because, like I said, this is what we're going to say. Well, I don't know that it's really necessary to do that, but I'm not really looking at it because...
Okay, perfect. Any other comments? All right. So, staff, anything else you have for us?
That's it. Thank you.
All right. So it's we're now moving forward to Dan's favorite part of the meeting, and that's adjournment. So anyone want to make a motion for adjournment? No one? We can stay here.
I, at the end of pick on Dan Day, I move to adjourn.
I love you. All right. We have a motion for adjournment. Is there a second? Manuel seconded. All in favor signify by saying aye. Aye. Opposed. We're adjourned.